And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could spend part of your day with us. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter if you can't get to the phone. Start of OTAs here at the Giants training facility. So we'll get you caught up on who was out there at practice. We'll take your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. A lot to certainly tackle over the next hour. And fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination at DraftKings. You can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. So the team is still practicing as we speak, and then in about 15 minutes, Ben McAdoo will address the media, and then some of the players will address reporters. So we'll keep you up to date with that as the show goes along. But we were out there for a bit in terms of practice and, you know, got an opportunity to see who was out there taking first team reps. And as far as the offensive line is concerned, Anita, you know, no drastic changes from what we saw at the end of last season. You had Marshall Newhouse and John Jerry at right tackle and right guard respectively. So that was at least interesting to see our first taste of the offensive line as OTAs get underway. And Ben McAdoo's been on the record. He has said from the start, it is still a story that is unwritten. They are going to test the waters. It's also important to note that Bobby Hart was getting first-team reps, too. He was going in and out with Marshall Newhouse. So even though they had their set starting group on the offensive line, Hart was also getting some reps at the right tackle spot going in and out with Marshall Newhouse.
Yeah, listen, there's going to be a lot of competition at a number of key positions this season for the Giants, and that right tackle position is going to be one of them. You know, and it's going to be interesting. Is it Marshall Newhouse's job to lose? Or is it going to be kind of an equal billing in regard to, all right, whose job is it to win? So so that's going to be obviously one of the key positions to look at. Of course, you know, nothing's a done deal yet. There's still some guys out there available for free agency. There's still some trades that can still possibly go down. There could be some names that are brought in that aren't on this roster. Only time will tell. But right now, if this is the team that's going to take the field for regular season game one, we've got a competition at the right tackle position. It's going to be fun.
And speaking of position battles, that's going to be our question for today's show. So if you want to weigh in on the phones, you want to weigh in on social media, we want to hear from you. Start of OTAs, what position battle are you most looking forward to watching play out over the next few weeks? You can name us a few guys that you think are going to be in the mix, whether it be for a starting job, whether it be for a backup job and so forth, but a specific position battle that you think is going to be key to keep close tabs on over the course of OTAs. We certainly want to hear from you. Now, the other position that's gotten a lot of chatter leading into OTAs, Zanita, has been the safety position. A lot of young players in the mix. They just drafted Darian Thompson. They had Landon Collins and Nat Burhe out there as the two starting safeties who were getting most of the reps with the first team. What was also interesting, Darian Thompson was out there with the second team, and they were moving him into the slot, and he was actually going up against Sterling Shepard with a number of one-on-one battles. And, you know, this was something that we've also been discussing. Who is going to be that slot nickel corner? And a lot of the safeties have had some work at corner. It was interesting to see Darian Thompson in the mix there. We've also seen in previous camps Bennett Jackson as he made the transition, Michael Thompson. So they may toy with a safety perhaps as that third corner, depending on obviously the formations and sets.
And you know, this is one of the things, the way that the NFL has developed now into this very, very pass-happy league, you need five DBs on the field at all times. You really do. And so, you know, it's interesting because, you know, a big discussion about the Giants safety position has been, well, they've got to go out, they've got to get a safety, they've got to get a safety to play opposite Landon Collins. But all along, this organization, from Jerry Reese to Ben McAdoo to the DB coaches, they've been very confident about the arsenal of guys that they have right here on the roster already. And I do find it interesting that, you know, there is a lot of depth at that safety position and depth of players that this organization feels can start, let alone then branch them out and have them play that slot corner position as well. There's a lot of talent here, and that's really going to be fun to see. What, you know, cream rises to the top. Who's going to rise to the top, number one? And number two, how Spags is going to utilize a lot of these guys with the amount of talent that's on this roster.
Certainly a number of position battles to look forward to. You mentioned the young nucleus that they have in the secondary. They also have some established guys. Janoris Jenkins was out there, very aggressive, pursuing the ball. Also at the tight end position, Larry Donnell and Will Ty were getting some reps in and out with the first team. So that is something to at least monitor. Larry Donnell, remember, working his way back from injury. It was good to see him back on the field. And Victor Cruz and Orleans Darko, who are still dealing with some injuries and recovering, they were on the side. They were in uniform, just obviously they're limiting the physical activity at this point because obviously they want them to be 100% over the course of the offseason.
Is that a concern for you at all in regard to the fact that, you know, that Victor Cruz is still being limited in regard to the work that he's getting?
I'm not that concerned. You have to keep in mind, with OTAs, you're limited in terms of physical contact to begin with. Now, at the same time, it's important for guys to get their legs back underneath them. But, you know, to me, the biggest priority is to have him ready for training camp. I think that if he's ready to go and he could take part in as many reps as possible, that's when you really start to obviously implement the majority of the physical contact. You're working with the team consistently. I think priority number one is to have him ready for training camp. If we get to that point and, you know, maybe he's still being held back, and I have no idea what their schedule is with respect to Victor Cruz, but it's not a surprise to me, I would think, at this point, because Ben McAdoo's pretty much laid out that they're going to take it easy. The last thing they want to do is put him in a position where he's going to re-aggravate anything.
And I totally understand that. And, you know, obviously, you know, I'm sure Giants fans are aware of this. If you're not, you need to know this. And that is, the Giants medical staff is one of the most conservative staffs in all of the NFL. They take no risk in regard to rushing players back, where there's a lot of teams out there who do rush players back, and then they try to compensate, and then they end up, you know, further injuring themselves. I mean, this is a very conservative medical staff here, so I have the utmost confidence that they're doing the right thing. But man, I read the date. The last time Victor Cruz got on the field was 2014.
In terms of a regular season game.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just such a long time to, like, not ball. You know what I mean? Like,
Well, he's been running at least and working out. But you're
not,
right. I mean, obviously he hasn't been in the football game.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
But I mean,
it
is important to note, though, that it's not as if he's been stagnant, though, throughout the course of this offseason. He's working out. He's trying to stay in shape. It's just he's not necessarily lining up and going up against a corner one-on-one in OTAs at this point.
And that's not even – I mean, like, just like full-fledged football. You know what I mean? Like, it's been a hot second. It's been a long time.
Absolutely. Well, you had numerous injuries. You had the knee injury and then obviously the calf last season. So a lot of things that he's had to overcome. But, you know, obviously it's good to have the guys back on the field. I'm sure a lot of the fans are excited. We're actually talking about some X's and O's for once and how the depth chart is playing out as opposed to speculation. And once again, question for the program, what position battle are you looking forward to the most as OTAs get underway? 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Let's open up the phone lines. Hear from you. Alex is in Sacramento. He gets us going on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Alex, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Good morning. Good morning, y'all. How are you guys doing today?
Good morning.
Doing well. How's things with you?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. The only issue that's popped up for me lately is I've been a Giants fan a very long time, almost. I feel like I've been a Giants fan as long as the Python. But, you know, I try to stay positive, and, you know, we've had some ups and downs. And the only thing that's been getting me lately is the negativity of some fans were freaking out about the right side of our offensive line. And I wanted to kind of bring up a point and ask a question. I remember hearing a few stats from people over the last couple of weeks that were positive about, I think, Newhouse and Jerry against the run. I think each of them ranked very well against Pro Football Focus. And so, you know, what they each have to work on a little bit would be their pass protection. But what I'm looking at here, so what I wanted to ask you is if you can remind me of any of these stats that, you know, kind of pop up from Pro Football Focus about the actual reality of how these linemen rank. And then my comment would be, are you in agreement with kind of the way that we're lining up with since McAdoo has come along with very quick passes, with particularly with, say, Sterling Shepard coming in and probably playing in the slot? I don't feel that the weakness on the right side of our line is this, oh, my God, the world's going to end. Our Giants, how did we not address this huge problem? I don't see it as a huge problem. And I'm just kind of disappointed in Giants fans. There's so much positivity and so many beautiful things going on this year in the offseason. Focus on all this negativity. It's really not that horrible. So I just kind of wanted to get your comments on that and See what you really think.
I mean, listen. I'm with you. I don't think it's doom and gloom. I don't think it's horrible. I don't think it's the worst right side of any offensive line in the NFL. But listen, this is a team that struggled rushing the football for the majority of the season. Yeah, they were able to turn it on as of late. And also, thank goodness for Eli Manning and the fact that he's so durable and he's so smart and he's so wise and he's able to get rid of the football so quickly. If not, I think he would have suffered a lot more sacks than he did this season. I mean, it's not that it's doom and gloom. It's not that the world is coming to an end, but it could be improved. There are players out there, and his name escapes me. You know, from San Francisco, the one who wants out,
Anthony Davis. You're talking about.
I mean, there's right, players right. out there that I think a lot of people feel would, you know, excited to bring in and plug in on that right side of the line that would a lot of people would anticipate would improve that right side of the line. But if they go into this season, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Lance, they go into the season with John Jerry and Marshall Newhouse. It's not the difference of them not winning 10 or 11 games. I'm not looking at it and saying, oh no, well now they're definitely not going to win 10 or 11 games because of those two players. No, it's not that dire. But at the same time, you know, you'd like to see it be improved.
Well, I mean, I think you also need to take into consideration a big part of the struggles for the team last year came on defense, too. So, you know, if you were to evaluate last year's team, you know, you can't necessarily place it just on the offensive line. Your point, Alex, about, you know, it shouldn't be all doom and gloom, I don't disagree with you. I think there's two ways to evaluate the offensive line. You're looking at the run blocking, which Anita alluded to, which anybody would say needs to improve, even with the same group coming back in, because the numbers didn't really get great until the end of the season. And then on the flip side, Alex, there's the pass protection. The pass protection has improved each and every year. I mean, the sacks have gone down if you look at the numbers. Exactly. Now, this offensive line hasn't been together for all of those years, but the numbers have gone down, and part of that is Eli Manning getting rid of the football quicker. If he's going to have Sterling Shepard, an additional weapon, you hope Victor Cruz comes back, and then some other running backs that I think can catch the ball out of the backfield. That only is going to help the cause to get rid of the football quicker. So there are ways to certainly get around perhaps some issues with your offensive line. But if I were to look at areas of improvement, I think it's more so the run blocking, Alex, than it is in terms of the pass protection. At least if you look at the numbers last year versus what happened in terms of the pass protection. The run blocking was the area that the Giants obviously want to get a little bit more consistent with.
Fair enough. I appreciate both of those. As Anita, you bring up a good point. You're right. It's not all doom and gloom, but obviously it definitely needs to improve. I think we were all hoping that we would see some type of, you know, jump up from what we had last year. But I think that, you know, Newhouse was new last year, and this is his second year, and he's actually played all season with those guys. Now you got guys, you know, that are coming in that, you know, who knows, maybe they even find a little bit of a rhythm with the guys going in, knowing he can fight for the starting job. You know, at the beginning of the season, when he came in, he thought he was going to be a backup, you know?
Correct. So, he was supposed to be that swing tackle. Yeah. Also, one other thing to keep in mind, Alex, remember, they also have a new offensive line coach, too, and Mike Solari.
Precisely.
Yes, so, you know, that's another viewpoint. It's a coach who brings something different to the table in terms of the individual as well as the group. So the personnel may be the same, but there are factors around the personnel that have changed.
Thank you, Lance. That's all I want some of these wonderful, you know, Giants fans out there to hear who have a tendency to see the, you know, the dark side of the moon when the sun's out. You know what I mean?
Well, and you have to also understand, Alex, I think part of the equation is we haven't really seen much football over the last few months. Now that we're actually going to see these guys back on the field, it's a little bit more substance. You could say, you know, how guys look next to one another. You know, it's easy to speculate and feel concerned when you don't have any football to go by. We're finally back to football, so I think you're going to see perhaps where the coaching staff has picked up, some of the new ideas, the new schemes that are being thrown out there, because we can observe a little bit more.
That's a great point, Lance. And one last thing, you guys, just on the topics that you brought up as far as the position battles, I'm actually looking forward to the linebacking battle more than anything. I've been excited about the safety thing for a while because we had three young guys last year. They all got hurt. They're all coming back. It's kind of like we've been waiting a year to see what some of these guys can really do, Bennett Jackson, Michael Thompson, you know, Burhey, whatnot. But the linebackers, so these are all three, you know, sorry, the safety position is all young people. The linebackers, we have experienced people that we've brought in who are NFL-ready veterans, you know, that have played a lot of games. And we don't really know a whole lot about these guys. So I think that's almost going to be a battle of men, while the safety battle is a battle of, like, you know, young guys in their young 20s or something like that. And the other one is going to be a battle of some real serious stuff, because the linebackers are really going to lead the defense, even if safeties make some calls back there. The linebackers are our leaders, and we're not 100% really who our new leaders are going to be coming in. So just wanted to throw that out there and see what you guys think, and wish you guys a great day.
All right, Alex. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. In terms of the linebacker, I mean, Alex brings up a good point. I mean, you got a few more veterans in that mix, much more so than you do have with the safeties. Jasper Brinkley was really the main middle linebacker that was out there today from what I saw with the first team. You had Casillas was out there a bit with the first team, Devon Kennard. They really were mixing and matching, but Brinkley was the guy that I think had the strongest presence in the middle, and it was interesting that the last caller talked about, you know, needing a leader. The one thing that I picked up from Brinkley, much more so than X's and O's, he was commanding the huddle as the defense was breaking. He seemed to be the most vocal presence, and I think part of that is the confidence it needed that he gained by being utilized as the main option with Spags last season.
Absolutely, and the one thing that Brinkley does have over Keenan Robinson is the fact that he has been able to stay healthy. Unfortunately, that's the biggest knock on Keenan Robinson, is that he has not been able to stay healthy. Hopefully that changes here with the Giants. Only time will tell, but you know, obviously, you can't make the club in the tub.
Correct. Right. You got to be on the field in order to accomplish that feat. And Robinson, who came over from the Redskins, he's one of those veterans that Alex, the caller, alluded to. You also have Kelvin Shepard, who came in from the Dolphins. He's another veteran. You have three veterans at the middle linebacker spot. I think we have a better idea, and I'm curious your thoughts. I think when you look at the linebackers, perhaps you know what's going to happen more so on the outside than perhaps maybe in the middle now, as
Devon,
you evaluate that.
Devon Kennard and JT Thomas. I mean, that's, you know, but B.J. Goodson, they just went out. They drafted him. I'm sure that we're going to see him play a role as the that weak side linebacker. You know, but the big question coming in is definitely that middle linebacker.
Absolutely.
Well, I think more than anything else.
Well, and the good news is, as the caller and we've talked about, you have options, and let the best man win. It's better to have options that compete than just have one guy who comes in and you just pencil him in. So they're going to mix and match, and right now it does look like Brinkley is in the driver's seat at least day one of OTAs. You can't really read too much into that. We've got Tommy in San Diego. Tommy, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, how you guys doing over there?
Doing well, Tommy. How's things with you?
Great, great. I wanted to go ahead and just jump right into the position battles. I think that the running back kind of has a logjam of players over there that are really caliber players. And depending on how Paul Perkins can pass block, I'd like to see if maybe he can step up and see if maybe he can take maybe like a Vereen spot and maybe leave Vereen open to possible trade with another team for, you know, some sort of veteran or caliber starting offensive lineman, and I just wanted to see what you guys maybe thought about that.
Well, I think you got to understand it twofold. If your option is you want to try to get Vereen on the market and then you're going to get something in return, you know, most teams that have starters, keep in mind, this late in the season, Tommy, are not going to really be parting ways with established veterans unless they're sold on their draft picks coming in and filling the void. So I don't know if that's necessarily a reliable option if you hope your rookie running back emerges so that Vereen you could dangle out there. And plus, let's not forget, Vereen was one of your top offensive weapons last season, and you can make the argument there was room for him to even be more involved in the offense. Ben McAdoo even said that. And I think that they at least hope to grow his role on offense this year. Perkins, he's a young guy. Pass protection obviously is going to be something that we'll have to see play out in OTAs and training camp. But Vereen is a valuable option in this offense. He's not a guy that I'd be so quick to get rid of right now.
You know, it's interesting. One thing that Ben McAdoo did this year is he spent a lot of time with a lot of the media that do cover this team. I mean, to the point where he had scheduled like 30-minute sessions where we were able to go upstairs, sit in his office, sit on his couch, chat, ask him anything, and he was actually asking us a lot of questions. And and one of the questions I asked him, I said, you know, because there's so many question marks, this is before the draft, right? Before they drafted Sterling Shepard. So I said, listen, you know, with so many question marks about Victor Cruz, I'm curious, you've got so much depth now at that running back position. Are you going to consider possibly using Shane Vereen more as like a slot wide receiver? And he said, no.
Interesting.
He goes, he looked me straight in the face. He goes, no. He says, are you applying for an offensive coordinating job? I said no. But anyway, but I thought maybe that would be an option. I feel the way that the Patriots were able to utilize Shane Vereen to me was on a much larger scale than I think what we've seen the Giants utilize him. I know he has a lot more to offer. Now, how Ben McAdoo taps into that this season, that's going to be a great question, and I can't wait to see it. But I am expecting bigger and better from Shane Vereen this year. I think it was just the tip of the iceberg in regard to what we saw him contribute last season. I think there's bigger and better to come.
What else you got, Tom?
I just thought there was a whole lot of value in a lot of the depth that we have there running back, and I thought maybe we could get something out of it instead of maybe just losing some of it. You know what I mean?
Well, but yeah, you have to look at it from this perspective, Tommy, too. You know, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but this team's dealt with a lot of injuries over the last few years. Do you really want to now? You have depth. Yeah, great depth at running back. Why so quickly do you want to get rid of that depth when you just can't control injuries? So it's better to have Perkins and Vereen versus have one of the guys and quickly ship the other one out of town. I think it's great to have options because it fosters competition in training camp. And like I said, you cannot indicate what's going to happen with the injury bug. You just don't know what's going to happen. So better protect yourself with depth than have fewer options in the mix. All right, Tommy, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to mix some tweets in as well. I know a lot of people chiming in there. Let's see. E, the chosen one. Because of the personnel and Spags' scheme, will the three safety package be used often this season, which we've seen the Giants utilize before?
As Paul Dottino likes to call the Ghidra package. And as some Yankee fans are calling that for their three-headed closer over there.
Out of the bullpen.
In the Bronx.
Yes. Well, in terms of the Giants utilizing three safeties, once again, they have a track record of doing that, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to automatically adopt that this year. I think it really depends on, are they confident that if they put three safeties out on the field, one of them can play the slot? That's probably the biggest question to answer your question, E. And, you know, as I indicated, we're seeing a few safeties be utilized out of the slot. If they grow confidence in the Bennett Jacksons, the Michael Thompsons, the Darian Thompsons, they feel good about putting them in the slot, then you'll probably see three safeties because you could see Landon Collins, Nat Burhan, one of those other guys out of the slot. I could see that happening, but they need to prove that they're reliable options out of the slot before we jump the gun and assume that we're going to see that more often than not.
Right.
That's what I think the biggest indication is in terms of whether or not you'll see that. And plus, remember, Eli Apple being utilized in the slot is obviously an option as well.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, look around the league, look around the NFL, and look at the receivers that are playing. Like, for example, with Jordy Nelson coming back, like, Randall Cobb is going to be, let's look at some of the teams. So Randall Cobb is going to play a lot more out of the slot. Dallas, who's that dude that plays a little, I like to call them mud bugs.
Mud bugs?
Yeah, they're mud bugs. You know, I grew up in Florida. We used to catch mud bugs, and they used
that,
to turn
that's
into frogs.
A new one. I can't say mud that I have adopted that terminology.
But what's his name?
Cole Beasley.
There you
about.
Go. Yeah. So you've got Beasley coming out of Dallas. You've got the Cookie Monster. You got Brandon Cooks. He plays a lot out of the slot with the Saints. Washington, now this is going to be interesting what they do with Josh Doctson. Do they put Josh Doctson in the slot? Because they like to have DeSean Jackson play wide and really stretch the field.
Well, Garcon could play out of the slot, too.
Minnesota, I wonder what they're going to do with the slot position in Minnesota. Green Bay, as I said, Randall Cobb now is playing there. Baltimore, it's really going to be interesting to see what happens with Breshad Perriman. Huge fan of his. Did not get on the football field last year. Expecting big things from him this season. With the Rams, obviously, it's Tavon Austin. That's tough. Philadelphia, is it Huff who plays out of the slot for Philadelphia?
Well, I mean, we really got to see what Doug Peterson chooses to do. Remember, they got some tight ends that I've seen line up in the slot, too. I would not be surprised if they really mix and match their combinations. They got a lot of young guys in camp there.
Not sure what Cincinnati is going to do because they lost everybody. Chicago, not sure. Cleveland, heck, Cleveland drafted
drafted about 17 like different wide receivers.
Yeah, I mean, just ridiculous. So does Hugh Jackson put Corey Coleman in the slot? Pittsburgh, Wheaton.
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is you're going to have three wide receivers on the field more often than not in this style of the NFL.
But
so therefore, you have to have three.
But I just wanted to kind of go down that list and kind of throw out some names out there of some wide receivers who do typically, not always, but typically come out of the slot position for those offenses.
Well, but remember, what also happens in the NFL a lot, if they see an inexperienced corner or safety in the slot, all the offensive coordinator needs to dial up is we're going to put the veteran wide receiver in against an inexperienced guy and let the best man win. So I wouldn't necessarily go by the amount of reps last season. I think a lot of it is adjustments throughout the course of the game, but it goes without saying. Wholeheartedly agree. You need three guys on the field out of your secondary that you could put out there at once, and you can't have any concerns and you can't have any doubts. Let's head back to the phone lines. We'll certainly continue to work in your tweets. We got Andre in Rochester. Andre, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Doing well, Andre. How's things with you?
Yeah, I want to get back to the running back position. I was wondering if none of the rookie wide receivers come out, will we keep more running backs than wide receivers?
What do you mean by
–
Not enough rookie wide receivers come out. What do you mean by that? I'm confused.
As in showing anything in training camp or OTAs and they end up getting cut.
Okay. So I'm assuming you're considering the undrafted wide receivers too, because Sterling Shepard is the one guy they drafted at that position.
Yes, that what brings me to, do you think they'll keep up, like, let's say, four or five wide receivers and keep five backs?
I could certainly see them possibly keeping five running backs. I think a lot depends on special teams. You know, Bobby Rainey, Orleans Darkwa, those are two players in particular that you know are going to help your special teams. If they feel that they want to strengthen that facet of the team, perhaps you push to five. I would think four is probably the safer number to look at, and I'm not including in that four the fullback position. So if you want to say you're going to have five backs, four running backs, one fullback, I think that's probably the safer assumption. If you go by that number, in terms of wide receiver, they could keep six if they really like six wide receivers. I wouldn't necessarily think that that's too high. A lot depends on, remember, Andre, you know, Victor Cruz. You know, how confident are they coming out of training camp with what he shows? You know, that's going to dictate maybe we keep an additional wide receiver than we anticipated. And then remember, there's going to be room for them to put one or two guys on the practice squad who in a pinch they could easily call up who were in camp, who know the system.
Yeah, that's true. I want to get to the competitions. I would love to see the Odell Beckham versus Eli Apple, or Sterling Shepard versus DRC Cruz against Jackrabbit, or OV and Flowers. That would be a great matchup. And hopefully JPP can help develop Bobby Hart and John Jerry. And I'll take your comments off the air. Thanks, guys.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call, Andre. Thanks so much for weighing in. It helps with an offensive line when you go up against a defensive line like that, as the caller just noted. And all four were out there, that new foursome, and with JPP and Olivier Vernon and Damon Harrison and Hankins. And, yeah, it is going to be a good test. I think that's an important point, you know, for Bobby Hart and even Marshall Newhouse, and he needed to be tested every day in practice.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited to see how Spags is going to utilize the plethora of talent that now is on that defensive line. You know, because I know we haven't gotten to the tweets yet. I'm sure you will get there eventually. But, like, I saw somebody was tweeting me about Double O. I've seen him a few times. He's been here around the facility, even, you know, beyond just the OTAs when he's supposed to be here. He looks good. He tells me he's feeling good. Obviously, he's going to be, like, that second string of defensive, that second wave of defensive linemen that are going to come in on situational plays. But I'm excited. I'm excited about him and Kerry Wynn. I'm really excited to see what these two guys are going to do. You know, if they do bring him in, do they move JPP inside? How often is JPP going to play inside? On what side of the defensive line is JPP going to play on? You know, Vernon, you know, both these guys, I think on occasion, I think you've got to have Vernon on the right side of the line.
Well, that's so, where he said he's most comfortable,
right?
On the right side. So, I mean, I would say that probably JPP is going to see more work on the left side as the season carries out. But Spags does like to mix and match. But Vernon was asked about that much earlier in the offseason program, and he said, my experience with the Dolphins, I've mainly been on the right side.
Right, but so is JPP.
Correct. But JPP's also been used on the left since he returned last year, too. And so I could see that being a little bit more comfortable for him to ease in.
And I'm sure with the situation with his hand, keep in mind, I'm sure with the situation with his hand, one side has got to be better than the other for him now. What side that is, I don't know. I'll ask. But I think it's a great problem to have because I think Spags is just going to get so creative, and I think it's going to be really fun to watch.
Let's go to Twitter. Speaking of the tweets, we heard from a few earlier in the program. AJ at AJ Marshall 3, do you think Jasper Brinkley will be a defensive captain this season if he wins the starting middle linebacker spot? I would not overlook that name. I mentioned this off the top. I thought he really commanded the huddle from what I saw today in the first day of OTAs. And if he wins a starting job and he earns the respect of his teammates, which he did last season, you know, that could be maybe an under-the-radar type of name. He's an established veteran. You know, Brinkley may not be a household name, but he's been with the Cowboys. He's been with the Vikings. This is far from his first rodeo in the National Football League. He's been in a number of different locker rooms, so he certainly understands the dynamics there. Let's head back to the phone lines here as we move along on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We've got Dennis on the phone lines. Dennis, what's happening?
Not much. Pretty quiet up here.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm sure you're not complaining from that standpoint. So what do you have for us?
I'd like to know what's going on with Brett Jones.
Well, Brett Jones was on IR last season, suffered an injury later in training camp. He was put on injured reserve, and he's back in the mix with the rest of the offensive linemen. You know, clearly, he's going to get some work on the second team as the backup center. We can maybe see him get some work at guard, but I wouldn't necessarily assume that. I think right now they view him as one of the first guys up to perhaps battle to back up Weston Richburg.
Okay, I thought they might move him over to guard.
Well, once again, I'm not ruling that out. I just haven't necessarily seen enough reps there to indicate that that's exactly what they have the vision for him. I think he's truly a center. Mike Solari, new offensive line coach, they may think, hey, you know, he could battle for one of the backup guard spots. I wouldn't rule it out. It's just right now I think maybe it's a little too early to tell there.
I don't know. I like everybody else, I worry about the line because Eli is now 35. That's the time the injuries hit. And unless they protect him properly, you know, our season goes out the window if he's gone. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm sure the backup quarterback will do a good job if something happened, but we won't see playoffs or even the Super Bowl if Eli gets hurt. And I'll leave it at that. I just am very worried that his age is going to cause us problems we never thought would happen. So he needs protection.
Well, listen, if you look at Eli numbers last season, Dennis, there were really no signs of him slowing down from a statistical standpoint. So, I mean, I understand you're concerned when you look at the number, but there's no real physical evidence to say, oh, my God, you know, he really can't move anymore. I thought Eli Manning statistically was fine, and this is an offensive line. I'm going to say it again. They just surrendered 27 sacks last season. That's a respectable number. When you look at the rest of the NFL, pass protection is not the biggest concern when I look at this offensive line, Dennis.
I'm thinking of Peyton and his injury, which suddenly appeared and he was gone for a year.
Well, but Dennis, hold on. Peyton Manning suffered a very serious neck injury. Eli Manning, knock on wood, has not missed a game throughout the course of his career, and there's no sign of any of those similar type of injuries. So, I mean, you're dealing with apples and oranges here with that type of statement.
They're both got the same genes. So
well, but listen, there's brothers that are from the same family that turn out with different rates of athleticism, too. So I wouldn't necessarily turn into a gene expert overnight because of that. But once again, there's no indication that he's necessarily following that same root tree in terms of Peyton Manning.
Okay. Well, thank you for answering my questions.
You got it, Dennis.
One thing that I'm expecting a huge year. I don't know about you, but I'm expecting a tremendous year from Eli Manning. You know, going into his third year under the system with Ben McAdoo, feeling a lot more comfortable, able to communicate with Ben McAdoo about it, being able to kind of tweak it here and there, make it his own. And from what I understand, going into this season, the biggest thing that Eli is working on is his footwork. To make it even better. So, and then you add Sterling Shepard, that a lot of the analysts and scouts that I've spoken to said that he's like a video game. It's like playing a video game with him. He's that explosive, and you can't cover him. So now you've got him and Odell Beckham Jr. Hopefully somebody at the tight end position takes a step up as well. That's an added dimension. You've got a lot of depth with the running back position. You've got running backs that are very good with the passing game as well. I'm excited for Eli's season this year. Even to the point, I know, you know, I talk a lot of fantasy football, but even to the point where, like, I think Eli Manning is going to be a huge sleeper in fantasy this year. Meaning I think a lot of people are going to sleep on him, and you could probably grab him in the draft. Obviously not in New York. It's different when you're playing fantasy in your backyard, and then
yes,
a lot of players will go a lot higher than anticipated. But I think across the country, I think a lot of people are going to be sleeping on Eli Manning. I think he's going to fall into the later rounds, and I will not be shocked that if at the end of the year Eli Manning is a top five quarterback in fantasy football this year, that's the kind of season I think he's going to have.
Well, despite some of the issues on offense last season, he threw for 35 touchdowns, which was a career high, so he actually was a sleeper this past season.
He wasn't top five.
No, but what I'm saying is that where he went and then the production
right.
you got out of him, that classifies as a sleeper, because who would have
yes.
thought he would have had 35 touchdowns and then he only had 14 interceptions. And, you know, I mentioned 27 sacks the Giants gave up. Now, to put that in perspective, just based on the last call or in terms of the concerns about pass protection, the Giants were tied for fourth in the entire NFL, the fourth least amount of sacks surrendered last season. The Rams gave up 18, that was one. The Jets gave up 22, the Ravens 24, and then you had the Giants, the Cardinals, the Bucks, and the Redskins all giving up 27.
And again, listen, you have to I'm not going to diss the offensive line, but you have to give Eli Manning credit for that, and also you have to give Ben McAdoo's system credit for that, because this is a system that a quarterback doesn't hold the ball for very long. You know, Eli Manning, go back and look at film. I mean, you know, he's not taking in Kevin Gilbride's system. It was seven step drop, hitch, throw the ball. That's not happening anymore. So that's helping him out big time in regard to his lack of sacks taking place.
No, and you look at Aaron Rodgers with the Packers, where Ben McAdoo came from. I mean, he's also known for getting rid of the football very quickly. I think it's become really a common theme across the NFL. Every quarterback at this point barely wants to hold on to the football because it's a very fast-paced game. Let's head back to the phone lines here, 201-939-4513. Lance Meadow and Anita Marks with you here on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, the start of OTA. So we've talked about what we've seen out on the practice field thus far. The question for the show, the position battle that you are keeping close tabs on, that you were excited about. We want to hear from you, whether it be on the phones or social media. We don't know if we want to hear from this next contestant, but we'll deal with it. Charlie's in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, Anita. Hey, Lance. I thought you'd be in the witness protection program.
No, I got out. I fortunately got out, Charlie.
Why?
So.
What happened?
Good.
Well, I had jury duty last week.
Oh, you did?
Yes. So that's what he was referencing.
How did that go? Was it civil?
I got out of it, so I'm not complaining.
Was it civil or criminal?
Did you tell him you hated people? That's how
Ooh.
I got out of mine.
Yes.
Were you... See, I would dig that.
Listen, you want to switch spots with me? You're more than happy to go on a trial. Anita, I'll sign you up. I know plenty of attorneys. We can make that happen.
I would dig to be a juror on a criminal trial. Do you know what it was like?
Well, I was in the box, but then...
They didn't pick them.
Well, they didn't pick me because I have a relationship with an attorney.
Did you get any of the specifics in regard to...
It was some type of a drug-related case.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know you wanted a little bit more gory.
Well.
You're
yeah.
disappointed.
Program,
yeah, well, listen, Charlie, I'm sorry to disappoint you. I know you were pulling for me to be on a trial for 3 weeks, but unfortunately I'm back here and you got to deal with me.
What did you say? Wait, Charlie, really quick. I'm just curious. Yeah. What did you say to get out?
Well, I said I have a family member who's a district attorney.
Oh.
So by conflict of interest, doesn't necessarily make me a very suitable juror, if you know what I'm saying.
Okay.
So.
Hey,
was...
I had a great log cabin up in Maine for you could stay.
That's very good to know, Charlie, because if there's any person I want to be well protected by, it clearly would be you all alone in a cabin. Sign me up for that. Yes.
Hey, look, I got to go through this offensive line because that last caller or the one before saying that it's not all doom and gloom. Let me take you through our offensive line, okay? This is the people we have on as depth, okay? We have Brian Stingley. Okay? He's the only one. He's got 7 years in the league. He's the only one that's actually probably was a backup offensive tackle. Then we have Jake Rogers, one-year guy, has never played, on our practice squad. We got Ryan Sizemore. Then we have Dylan Farrell. Never played a snap. Just And then we have Emmett Cleary. And then we have Eric Flowers. And we have Marshall Newhouse, as everyone knows, should not be a starter, should be a backup. And let me take you to our guards, Adam Geddes, Bobby Hart, John Jerry, and Justin Pugh. Now, what happens in center? Let's see. We got to go to our centers. We have Brett Jones, who's never taken a snap in the NFL, played in Canada. Then we have Shane
McDermott.
Didn't
just play in Canada. Wasn't he like Canada's like offensive?
Yeah, he was one of the best players.
Wasn't he like Canada's offensive lineman of the year?
10 yards behind the line of scrimmage. Yeah, he plays pretty well. Let's see if he can do that in the NFL.
There's a difference in terms of where you line up. Yes, Charlie. Yeah, you get brownie points for that, okay?
So what I'm saying is we have no depth. What happens if Pugh goes down? Because they use Pugh for everything. Left guard. Right tackle goes down. Pugh goes over there. Left tackle goes down. He goes over there. What happens if he goes down? We have no depth on this offensive line. We don't have. This is the Titanic. We're riding the Titanic on this offensive line. And anybody doesn't see that. We have no veteran talent depth on this line. None. We have none. Jerry has not finished free agency. He has not finished what he started out to do. First of all, he needed to take care of the defensive line, which he did. We needed to get a veteran free safety, which he didn't. And he also needed to fix this offensive line on the right side at least, bring in some depth, some talent. He hasn't done it. And if you don't think this is going to be a problem, you're all crazy, because this is a three-peat coming up on this offensive line.
Charlie, I will say this in regard to the safety position. I know you've called in the show. You've said this before, and I don't know. I don't know how many times I have to tell you. This organization, this coaching staff, truly believes they're not blowing smoke. Okay, they truly believe that they've got some starting talent that's going to be competing for that job at that position. They don't feel like you do. They don't feel they need to go out and bring in a veteran free safety to play opposite Landon Collins. They do not believe that.
I know that.
Okay. So, but you keep on. That's something that you keep on communicating on the show, and I'm telling you that is not the case. And I understand why you're doing it, because there's unproven talent here that you haven't seen really prove themselves on the football field. So you're sitting back and going, well, I don't know what these guys can do, so I'm just gonna immediately assume that they're no good, and that's not the case here.
No, I'm not saying they're no good. I'm saying is if you have Okay, you want to talk about, we need somebody back there with leadership. You know, you need
Jenkins was brought in. Jenkins will be your leader.
I mean, safety position.
But it's safety position. It's 4 or 5 guys working in unison. You need one leader and in that secondary, and that's another big reason why Jenkins was brought in. Jenkins will be your leader in that secondary.
All right, we'll see. How about the offensive line, Anita? Tell me on this roster who is challenging for a starting position. Who's going to, besides Bobby Hart? Which hasn't, you know, he's played a little bit.
If the season was to start tomorrow, it would be John Jerry and whoever wins the battle between Marshall Newhouse and Bobby Hart. I mean, listen, you know, is there a lot of depth on this offensive line? No, but do I feel
no,
that, but do
exactly.
but do I feel Jerry's done? No, I don't. In a few instances, number one, like I said, there's some names of some players that are out there that potentially could end up here, whether it's a trade, whatever the case may be. Also, it always happens. Once you get into training camp, rosters have to be cut down. There's other teams out there that have a lot more depth at the offensive line position, and it's going to come down to them having to cut a player that they don't necessarily want to cut on the offensive line. And once they do, who knows? He might end up here with the Giants. So, you know, I don't think this roster is complete yet on the offensive line.
You know, Charlie, I think you gotta look at the fact that, you know, and Anita touched on this briefly, you're looking at names and you're looking at the number in the experience column, but you really don't know what you have until we see these guys out on the football field. And I'll agree with you that they're all unknown commodities, but it's hard to judge them if you haven't even seen them on the football field. That's the whole point of getting them out there on OTAs, seeing what Mike Solari feels about these individuals, and then, you know, you approach the next section of your offseason. Do you like what you have? in your depth chart, or do you want to look at the free agent market, or do you look at if there's any June 1st cuts or anybody that's let go in training camp? But, you know, they're still at the stage where they're evaluating all of those names that you threw out there. Brett Jones, he wasn't even on the football field last year because he was on IR. He knows the system.
My point, exactly.
But let him get on the field, I guess, is what I'm saying, Charlie, so you can truly evaluate what you have. You're just looking at names on paper right now. But they actually are going to have to see these guys put on pads before you immediately cancel them out and say, hey, this guy's no longer an option. I don't think we're there yet. I don't think there's enough substance to go by that.
Okay, I don't agree. I think when you have a quarterback like Eli Manning, who's 35 years old, the first thing you do is you put an offensive line around him that is the best in the NFL. You bring in talent to protect him, to run the ball. You bring in a Mac. You bring in a Michael Schwartz. You bring in a Jake Long. You make the best offensive line. He's got 4 years left at most, and he can win two more Super Bowls when we have an offensive line to run the ball and protect him. That would have been the first thing I would have done, not the last thing. And Eric Flowers is not a left tackle, and we will find out this year that he isn't. He should be on the right side. Bring in a left tackle, trade for Joe Thomas, solidify this line, and then we have a really good shot of going to the Super Bowl with our new improved defense. I'm telling you, I'm the canary in the mine. This offensive line is going to bring this team down if it isn't corrected. That's all I got to say.
All right, Charlie. Appreciate the phone call. At the same time, remember, you know, the defense needed to improve this season, too. And they did put a lot of their resources in the defense. You know, the topic of this show has really transformed into the offensive line. And, you know, there's areas of improvement everywhere. But, you know, let's not forget, a number of the losses, a number of the issues last season go back to the defense. And they did prioritize that this offseason. They brought in pieces specifically on the defensive line to improve that pass rush. So, you know, you have to understand it's supposed to go hand in hand. If your defense improves, that should help your offense in terms of time of possession and everything else. And that was something that they couldn't necessarily rely on consistently over the course of last season.
Really quick, practice is over. Players and Ben McAdoo have been made available to the media. Here's just two little snippets for you. First-round draft pick, obviously, Eli Apple worked outside and at nickel corner in OTAs today. His quote was, it's going to be a challenging transition, he said, on working in the slot. I'm sure it will be. Also, McAdoo, if you're not aware of this, McAdoo, a few changes at practice. Number one, music is being played at practice now. Number two, they're taking commercial breaks. So practice is feeling more like a game than just practice. Also, he's got fundamental drills, periods of fundamental drills that he's named. One is the Duke, and he's named it after Wellington, and that focuses on ball security. Another is LT, he named that after, obviously, LT, and that's tackling drills. And then he has another fundamental drill called the Snee, and, of course, that focuses on blocking. Just FYI.
And that was one of the things that Ben McAdoo mentioned, even going back to a little bit earlier in the offseason program where they had their little mini camp. We're practicing fundamentals, hiking the football, handing it off, just the basics so that you can bring that to the table once you get into, obviously, the OTA period. Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy sports. Pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Jason in Denmark. Jason, what's happening? Jason, are you there? Must have lost Jason. I know we appreciate
it. Can you hear me?
We hear you, Jason.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you loud and clear.
Okay, cool. Well, if y'all don't have kids, y'all are well prepared for them after that call.
Yes, Charlie takes patience, takes durability. Well said. We are well prepared. Can't deny that, Jason.
Yeah. My question today, to try to tone things and change it a little bit, is... In New Orleans, we put up a lot of points last time around, and I wonder how we can do that again this year for more games.
Well, the offense, if you look at the production on average, it wasn't bad. I mean, it was up there in terms of most of the offensive statistical categories. I think the simple answer is, Jason, you got to run the football. because if you're running the football, you're going to pick up more first downs, you're going to move the chains, and you're going to get into scoring position. I mean, that's what needs to meet the passing game at least halfway, so that when you have a third and one, Jason, you're able to pick up the first down on the ground, and you don't have to worry about throwing it 5 or 6 yards down the field. So the running game, I think, should solve a number of some of the shortcomings that they faced on offense to continue getting that points up as well. Now, I'm not taking anything away from that game, Jason, but at least in fairness, to put things in perspective, remember, the Saints had also one of the worst defenses statistically in the NFL last season. So I wouldn't necessarily look at that as a gauge to say what you hope to put up moving forward. I think this offense is certainly capable of putting up points, don't get me wrong, but the Saints-Giants game was a very rare, unique occurrence. You're not going to see both quarterbacks combine for 13 touchdowns in every game. At least the Giants' defense is not hoping that's going to happen again.
Yeah, it was just nice to see. And two more quick things, because I know Charlie was long. And don't get me wrong, and I love Charlie. I was just joking.
Well, that makes one of us, so.
Come on.
Hey, he opens the door for it. I'm not going to necessarily deny him that.
Charlie's a nice guy.
I keep telling him that. Yeah. He needs to hear it, so. I'm sorry, Jason. What else you got?
Miles White, he showed some flashes last year. You think he's going to do good in the position battle?
Well, Miles White, you know, he's in the mix. It's interesting you bring up his name, because I feel as if he's sort of like that lost name that nobody else considers. And he knows McAdoo from the Packers. He was brought in because of his familiarity with the system. I wouldn't rule him out. I mean, I think he's got to prove a lot in terms of the preseason, and you want to see continual development. But if they go to 6 wide receivers, Jason, as I mentioned earlier in the program, you know, Miles White is certainly going to be in that mix.
Yeah, I like what I saw from him in those couple of games. And lastly, I was reading on the Bleacher Report that they were suggesting that we can get, I think it's Jake Long on the cheap. You think we would even look into that?
Well, remember, Jake Long, there was speculation last season about perhaps bringing him in, and then he ultimately signed with the Atlanta Falcons. Do they want to go down that road again? Perhaps. I mean, you always need to look into that, especially if you feel you want to improve the offensive line. But, you know, if you've already done your homework with that player and you didn't necessarily grab him, I don't know if that's necessarily the top guy on your list anymore. You need to maybe look at it from that perspective.
Okay, cool. All righty, well, love the show, and I'll call again soon.
All right, Jason, good hearing from you. Appreciate you chiming in on the phone call there. I know he sounds like he's got some busy children in the background, so we don't want to necessarily keep him, but certainly appreciate you chiming in.
But really quick, with Long, if I remember correctly that he came here and was evaluated, right?
I believe so. In terms of that was what happened.
You know, he's got, I want to say he's got some knee issues.
He did last year.
Yeah.
And then he ultimately signed with the Falcons. He played with the Falcons. It took him some time to learn the offense, but yes, the knee has been an issue in the past. So that's something, once again, you got to consider if you bring him in again. You know, is he at full strength? Can he hold up? And those are the types of conversations you always have to have with any player. Let's peruse Twitter here before we wrap up the program. I know a number of people who couldn't chime in on the phone lines have some questions in terms of the makeup of the roster and some of the position battles, so we want to have an opportunity to get their thoughts out there. If you see anything in need of two, feel free to throw them out there. Let's see here. We got this one from at 1102 Joey M. Interested in the tight end position battle. How is Daniel Fells these days? Well, Fells obviously was overcoming MRSA, which put him on IR last season.
I heard he's doing well.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, but he's still having to have a number of surgeries, and he still has a lot of surgeries left. So, but everything that I'm hearing is that he's doing well.
Kevin M. Gilbride, who's the tight ends coach, was actually asked about Daniel Fells, and this was a few weeks ago. I haven't heard any updates since, but he was asked about, have you spoken to Fells? And he says they communicate time to time. He's doing well. Obviously, he's still recovering with his family. In terms of whether or not he's going to continue his football career, that right now is up in the air. But it is good to hear that he is on a full road to recovery from, unfortunately, what he had to deal with last season. Now, in terms of the tight ends that are on the roster, you know, we talked about that a little bit off the top. I mentioned mentioned, Larry Donnell and Will Tye were out there mixing and matching with first-team reps. Jarrell Adams was getting work out there with the second team. I tell you, up close and personal, he is a massive presence. Adams is a big boy, and he's also going to be a key contributing factor on special teams, where we have heard that from some of his college coaches as well as the Giants' plans. But to me right now, you know, Will Tye and Larry Donnell, those are the two returning guys that are in the driver's seat. You know, Donnell is working his way back from a health perspective, and Tye was extremely productive last season. Those are the two guys. I think we need to see, you know, who holds up the most and whether or not, you know, Tye continues to develop. Remember, he was somebody that grasped the opportunity out of the blue and became a nice security blanket for Eli Manning. But, you know, blocking, those are the types of aspects that you'd like to see him tweak moving forward with respect to his all-around game. Let's take a look at some more tweets here coming in.
This is from Patricia Trania, who obviously a lot of people out there I'm sure already know covers the Giants. I guess, you know, a lot of the players being made available to the media right now as we're hosting the show, and she said Snacks is becoming a media favorite. I have not had a chance to meet him or introduce myself or speak to him yet. Have you?
I've had some interaction with him in terms of the locker room.
I hear like he's just a really, really cool guy. Like, yeah, really very down to earth, kind of fun to talk to, fun to chat with. I know that, you know, across the country, the Giants really kind of, why would you spend that much money on a tackle? But if you go back and you look at the stats for the Jets last year in regard to when Snacks was on the field and when he was not, and the average rushing per snap for opposing running backs, it's unbelievable. Like, just, you want to talk about one guy making a difference maker, a playmaker. Criticize the Giants for the amount of money that they spent on him. I think he's going to be one of the biggest stars this coming season on the defensive side. And granted, yes, you like those edge rushers. You like when they pin their ears back and they go after the quarterback and, you know, JPP with 9 sacks and Olivier Vernon with it. I get all that. But watch what Snacks does, and keep an eye on the stats in regard to when he's on the football field, when he's not, in regards to yards per carry for opposing running backs. I think he's really going to make some noise in that department. I think he's going to be huge this season.
Speaking of the defensive line, we have two tweets on that subject. First one's a statement, second one's a question. At ColeWiss88, best thing about the starting defensive line is that other teams can't afford to double anybody because of the 4 starting weapons. Then at Bill_Norris550, how do you guys see Double O's role this year? I think he's a wild card that could be very disruptive. He and Kerry Wynn got first reps on the second team behind Vernon and JPP today. And this was one of the things we talked about, that third defensive pass rusher. I think it is extremely wide open with who can grab that job. I also would not rule out Spag saying to himself, if he feels that he wants to put Double O, JPP, and Vernon on the field at the same time, somebody can move to the inside. So I think they're going to experiment with Double O in terms of where they can line him up. He, to me, is the front runner, assuming he stays healthy and assuming that he fully digests this scheme. And you know he's hungry from what he told the media a few weeks ago, where he could be that third pass rusher, where he's in on those third downs and so forth. I could see that definitely being a role for him. And I think there's also upside, depending on, you know, his progression, where, you know, he could be a guy that you could also have in against the run. I wouldn't rule that out as well.
Well, this is what I said a little bit earlier on the show. You know, that's what I think is going to be really exciting, because now there's so much depth and there's so much talent that Spags is going to be able to work with on that defensive line, that he's really going to be able to get creative. And how he utilizes Double O, how he might rush Devon Kennard. Keep that in mind. You know, here we are, we're thinking Devon Kennard, linebacker, but my goodness, I think there's going to be a lot of really cool packages and schemes that he's going to be able to create where he can send Devon Kennard on a few blitzes. If Devon Kennard can stay healthy, I think Devon Kennard can have a phenomenal year because of all the talent that's on the defensive line that's going to get a lot of the attention. So I think this is going to be a really fun year for Spags. I think he's got a lot to work with.
A lot of tricks in the bag, so I'm sure that he's dying to unleash them. Speaking of Kennard, I brought this up on a few occasions. It's also the first time that he's going to be in the same defensive system in back-to-back years because of all of the shuffling that he had to deal with in college. One more tweet here before we wrap up the program. We've got a few questions on Nikita Whitlock, so I'll hone it down to one. We got @D_nicefor_life. who's going to win the fullback battle? Will Whitlock get moved to the defensive line? And I sort of made an inkling at that in previous weeks. Will Johnson is the other fullback who can really play multiple positions. They brought him over from the Pittsburgh Steelers. If they feel as if they only want to keep one fullback, but they like the upside of one of the other guys, Whitlock at least gives you an option to put him on defense, so that helps his case to make the team. I didn't see him much on defense out there today in terms of OTAs. As OTAs progress, I'm sure perhaps we'll maybe see a little bit more. It's too early to tell who the front runner is, though, at fullback. I mean, you have to see more. As I mentioned, I think Johnson's a little bit more versatile because of where you can line him up. But when Whitlock was used late last season at Ida, that coincided, there's no coincidence, with the running game improving. When they inserted him into the lineup, him and Rashad Jennings clicked, and that running game got going. So you can't necessarily overlook his value.
No, I mean, the great thing about him is that, you know, you could use him on both sides of the football and special teams. So, you know, when you're that kind of slash player who, when your number's called, you come in, and on top of that, you make plays, it's very valuable. It's a very, very, you know, that skill set is extremely valuable.
So day one of OTAs here on Monday. Ben McAdoo spoke to the media. Some of the players chatting with the media. All those interviews will be up on Giants.com by later today. We appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Big Blue Kickoff live with you each and every weekday this week as we'll continue to recap OTAs and continue to talk about all the position battles that lie ahead. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live.